Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast, the last one from our WA election coverage. It's been economy, economy, economy in this Western Australian campaign. So today we're talking with Alan Duncan, who's director of the Bank West Curtin Economics Centre at Curtin University. Alan Duncan, how bad is the Western Australian economy?
Well, it's certainly the case that the WA economy has experienced a number of challenges, especially over the last 3 or 4 years post-resources boom. And of course, I don't think anybody could have anticipated the degree to which iron ore prices have dropped. But in some degree, there is a little bit of a return to normality, rather than it being a reversal of a sort of standard position. We are still travelling at above national growth rates in Western Australia. So whilst there is a sort of change in the industry landscape in WA, I think perhaps the sort of the deepest doom and gloom stories are a little bit overblown. But that does mean I think we have to pay attention to where the new growth in WA is coming from and which new industry sectors are likely to pick up a bit of the growth.
And what are those sectors?
It's absolutely the case that mining and resources more generally will continue to be the cornerstone of WA's economic future, no doubt about it. But there's not so much certainty on where other growth sectors are likely to emerge to do some of the heavy lifting, either in relation to growth or in relation to jobs. A lot of the sectors that have been talked about as part of the future growth story of WA, for example, tourism or agriculture, hospitality, food, they're of course important contributors to the WA economy, but they will never be the new mining. And really, they would all need to work together to get anywhere near a sort of an engine for growth. And my sense is that economic recovery is likely to be a harder slog than the period of the economic boom, where WA really was prosperous. I think if you look at tourism, for example, that's been quite a strong narrative recently, and indeed Colin Barnett is the tourism minister. But when you look at the contributors to tourism, accommodation, food, retail, arts, then together they still only make up around 5% of the state's gross economic value. And so I think that characterises tourism as an important contributor, but not the next big thing. And other sectors like agriculture, of course, they have been part of the state's DNA it goes back through WA's history, and they will remain important, especially in regional WA, but jobs in agriculture have been falling quite consistently, and also jobs in WA agriculture as a share of national agriculture jobs, they've been on the decline too. So I think the narrative is perhaps a little bit confused and probably needs rehearsing a bit more in the run-up to the election.
Has the government mismanaged the economy? Did it waste the funds available to it from the boom, or are the problems really beyond any government? Are they basically just changing circumstances?
Look, I don't think anybody could have anticipated the degree to which iron ore prices and therefore the revenues that flow into the state have declined over this recent period. I mean, terrific now that iron ore prices are above $60, but there was a period of time where the price was just unprecedented. So in that degree, I think it was impossible to anticipate those circumstances. It was the case in the heat of the resources boom that from some quarters there were arguments around the extent to which the revenues from the boom were committed to recurrent spending and spending commitments that were hard to reverse. So that has been part of the discussion in the state, whether or not the flow of significant royalties revenues have effectively just been incorporated in as if there would be a recurrent revenue stream. So I think there's there are some questions there.
So how urgent is it for the next government, whether a re-elected Barnett government or, on the polls, a Labor government, to fix the budget? How serious is the whole budgetary problem?
Whichever government is returned at the election, I think debt, the debt position and recovering the debt position, WA has to be a priority. We have a deficit of $3 billion on the Treasury's, WA Treasury's pre-election update. We have a debt position of around $33 billion. These are significant numbers, and the debt position has been projected to rise. And indeed, a return to balance has now been pushed out to beyond 2020. So the debt position in WA is going to continue quite into the future unless something significant is done. The loss of the AAA credit rating wasn't the best for confidence, and it really has brought debt consolidation to the centre of the debate as a key imperative for any WA government. And of course, when you look at the debates and the debt consolidation solutions from the two main parties, we know that the Liberals have committed to selling off half of Western Power, and that's mooted to yield around $11 billion. But at what cost in terms of the loss of productive capacity owned by the state? And then where next?
Well, just on that proposed sale, is the loss of that capacity serious for a future government if that happens?
When you explore the sort of typical traditions of public finance of investing in productive capital, it's part of the wealth of the state, and so I think should one have to at a certain point sell off that capital in any significant degree, I think it has to be an issue. And as I say, where next? Does Fremantle Port and come into play in terms of prospectively quite a contentious additional sale to recover the position even further?
But privatisation is the way of the moment, isn't it? Or at least it's been the way for a couple of decades.
Mm. Yeah, I mean the important point is what the appropriate model is, so that privatisation doesn't disadvantage the state in terms of the continued provision of service and the support for the financial position of the state. And when you look at Labour's debt plan, which is more towards tightening up of spending, efficiency dividends in public service, and a model which opens up a debt reduction account into which is channeled 50% of royalties revenues, but under circumstances where the GST return to the state exceeds 65 cents and iron ore tops $85 per tonne, then to make significant inroads into the state's debt position does require these two stars to align in ways which haven't really historically been the case. So I think the debt debate is clearly very a live debate, and one that that I think possibly is still to be won.
In this search for revenue, what about the Nationals' proposal for a mining tax on BHP and Rio?
Again, mining taxes have been contentious, and to a degree where I think from the sort of big business end of town, there is a concern that that's going to detract from the capacity for industry to recover from the current position. So,
is that a justifiable fear, though?
I think all would need to lend some contribution to the recovery of our position, but we've seen amongst the election commitments a commitment to reduced payroll tax on the part of the Liberal government. That, you know, does raise a question of where the revenues might come from to replace those revenues lost in reduced payroll. Now, of course, the argument there is that reduced payroll tax will increase the profitability and the productivity of industry sectors, and to that degree you will get some offsetting flow of revenues from other forms of, for example, company tax. But but certainly in terms of state revenues, I think payroll tax will need to be offset. And if you think about the revenues that return to the state from, for example, GST, again, whilst GST revenues are likely to recover given the flow back to the state of GST revenues are likely to recover given the formula that is used for disbursement, that again isn't likely to fill the gap anytime soon.
Now, when the GST revenues do recover, the federal government has suggested that a floor be put under the WA share, right?
That's right, yeah.
And will that stop the cries from WA, which we hear very, very regularly?
Certainly putting a floor on the GST revenue return has been a consistent the argument and a consistent proposal from WA. I suppose my line there is that the circumstances that have given rise simultaneously to a fall in royalties revenues, and because of the lag in the GST redistribution formula, a fall in GST revenues too. That's unfortunate at this point in time, but there will be a point in time in the future where the GST revenues will rise because of the current circumstances. And so this the sort of misalignment of current revenues from royalties with sort of historical revenues generated from the GST distribution formula, that can turn to into WA's favour. As it used to be, yeah. So, applying, I'm agnostic about whether or not applying a floor is a good idea. I think it imposes possibly an additional constraint on the flow of funds across states and territories in Australia.
Now, if the polls are right and Mark McGowan becomes Premier on Saturday, how do you think he will get on with the Turnbull government? Do you think it'll be more difficult or less difficult for him?
Again, I don't want to get too much into the conversation on the politics of the relationship between a prospective McGowan government versus a Barnett government and the federal government under Turnbull. My sense is especially in the current circumstance in WA, pragmatism is the order of the day, and I think shoring up relationships between state and federal governments has to be in the state's interest. I see no strong signals that a relationship between a prospective McGowan government and the Turnbull government will be antagonistic. As I say, I think there's a sense in which pragmatism is really the order of the day.
Alan Duncan, thank you very much for talking with us today.
It's my pleasure.
On the polls published so far, Mark McGowan has an excellent chance of being Premier after Saturday's election. And we've caught up with him in the electorate of Bicton, which on the pendulum is the last one which Labor needs to capture to get government. Mark McGowan, debt and deficit are the big problems in this state, and Colin Barnett proposes to sell a majority of Western Power to help pay down the debt. How can Labor match in financial terms this sort of promise as it tries to get the budget back into shape?
Well, we're not going to sell Western Power. Western Australia is different. We're not connected into the national electricity market. The grid itself, which is what Western Power is an area about the size of New South Wales, covering regional cities and communities, as well as the growing area of Perth. And if it's sold off, our long-term financial position gets worse because we lose the income it provides.
So what's your alternative to get some money?
We will manage the finances more carefully, particularly the recurrent side. That was what we've done when we were in government. The history of Western Australia for the last 25 years is that Labor has been the better financial managers. We delivered surpluses every single time we've been in government, every single year. The Liberal Party has delivered deficits for at least half their time in office for the last 25 years.
Would Labor take longer to get back to surplus than the Liberals on present policies and costings?
I wouldn't think so. We're releasing our costings later on this afternoon, but we will get back to surplus and we will ensure that good financial management is restored in Western Australia. The current position is this: after the greatest boom in the history of the world, in the greatest mining state in the world, with the largest royalties revenue in history, the current government has taken our debt from $3.6 billion to $33 billion with a $3 billion annual deficit. That's the legacy of Mr Barnett and the Liberals and Nationals.
Why don't you support the Nationals' plan for a higher tax on Rio and BHP? It sounds quite a Labor thing to do.
Because it's ripping up state agreements that were entered into between the state government and investors and the state, and that will cost the state jobs and investment. And what's more, under the Commonwealth Grants Commission process, 90 cents of every dollar raised will go to Tasmania, South Australia, the Northern Territory and Queensland.
Now, the general thinking is that One Nation will either get the balance of power in the upper house or be part of the balance of power. How would your government deal with One Nation? Do you think it would frustrate your program?
Just firstly, the reason One Nation's in that position is because the Liberal Party's done a preference deal with them. Without the Liberal Party preference deal, that would not be happening. So it's very important that people understand that. Secondly, the way you deal with the upper house, in my experience as a former minister, is you present good legislation and you argue the case. There's no easy solutions when you have a hostile upper house apart from good legislation, argue the case, get public support and win the votes.
But surely One Nation in a way is a special case, especially for a Labor government. Wouldn't you find it hard to get some of your core promises through?
Well, I would just hope that One Nation, if they get elected, come in and look at the merits of legislation that comes before them. If they look at the merits of the legislation, well, I hope they support it. If the One Nation doesn't, well, then I would hope the Liberals and Nationals look at the merits of what we put up and support it. 90% of legislation that goes before Parliament is agreed between both sides. So it's really only 10% that's argued over. And I would hope that the Liberals, Nationals, One Nation, whoever's in the upper house, if we are successful, treat legislation as it should be treated, which is on its merits.
So would you seek to bring a consensus style to the premiership if you're elected? Certainly in Canberra we see a very adversarial style even at the start of a new federal term. What would be your approach?
The Trump-Abbott style of governing, which is extremely divisive, I don't think is the way to go. One of my political heroes, who I spent a couple of days with recently, actually, is Bob Hawke. And what he managed to do was bring people together, get things done, have a approach in which he took the people with him. And that's sort of my nature anyway. So that's the style I'd hope to emulate.
Did he have any advice for you?
I'm sure he did. He told me to have a light beer. I didn't follow his advice, but he told me, basically he talked about the National Economic Summit that he put in place in 1983, and he talked about making sure you work with business, unions, community and the like. And I agree with that, and that's the approach I've adopted over the 20 years I've been in Parliament.
If you were Premier, how would you deal with the Turnbull government?
You put forward, as a West Australian, you put forward robust case on behalf of your state. We never seem to get any favours out of the Commonwealth, and what we have to do is be absolutely forceful and never, ever give in. And I think that's the way to treat the federal government, whoever they are. I think the Liberal Party has taken Western Australia for granted for too long. This whole idea that the state just always votes Liberal, I think, has hurt Western Australia. It's meant that we get a very poor GST share, very small share of defence jobs, in fact, less than 3%, and a whole range of other issues where we've been hurt. And I think they need a dose of a state government that treats, that gives them a very, very forceful treatment. And that's what I'll do.
You're proposing to unwind the Liberals' infrastructure plans, and I think the federal government has said that you would lose money, you'd be disadvantaged by that. How would you deal with that situation?
We will get the money, because that's what happened in Victoria. The road they're proposing to build is a complete waste, and it doesn't fix the problem that they're talking about. It's nearly $2 billion on a road that stops 3 kilometres short of the port. We will spend that money more wisely on road and rail projects in Western Australia, and we will get the money, because that's what happened in Victoria.
But are you saying that the threat that's coming from Canberra, which was made, of course, after the whole Victorian shenanigans, won't be carried out? That
no.
They're just bluffing? Is that
they're
true?
Bluffing. They're making it up. They'll say that to try and help Colin Barnett before the day, and after the election, if we're successful, they'll negotiate. And I'll tell you why, self-interest. Because if they don't work with the West Australian government to give us our fair share, the electorates of Pearce, Hasluck, Swan, Canning, Stirling will be lost to the Liberal Party. Self-interest always wins out, and so they will do the right thing, because Christian Porter will be the first one to fall.
They're fighting words from a Premier to be.
Well, you have
from
to.
From your point, hopefully, who says he's going to be a consensus Premier?
Well, I'll certainly be consensus in Western Australia, and I'll be forceful with the Commonwealth. That's the way you have to treat Canberra. I've learnt that over a long period of time. I actually grew up in the East, so I spent my early years in New South Wales and Queensland, and I understand that the Eastern states know very, very little about Western Australia, and most people in the East have never even been here. And so if you're going to get a fair share in Western Australia, you can't be a shrinking violet. You have to be absolutely forceful.
Well, the West is never a shrinking violet over the GST, but in that case, you're battling not primarily actually with Commonwealth, but with other states, and of course Labor states. So how are you going to make a pitch for a better deal, or are you just going to wait for the cycle to turn?
Well, you continue to have a consistent position. I think part of the problem is that the current government has had 5 or 6 different positions on the GST, including full support when it was originally signed. So you've got to have a consistent position. I think that's what Western Australia needs, a government that, irrespective of who is the Prime Minister, who is the Premier in South Australia or Queensland, or the Chief Minister in the Northern Territory, they hear the one position coming from Western Australia all the time, and that hasn't happened up until now.
So you're hopeful that really the GST deal can be enhanced?
I am very hopeful, and I'll be very forceful on the issue. There's other issues out there as well, defence spending. South Australia got 97% of the defence spend on ships, and we got 3%, even though we have the most efficient ship private sector shipbuilders in the country. A whole range of issues like that need a new approach from Western Australia.
Have you had any talks with your fellow Labor leaders, who are premiers, about the GST?
I know that they've heard me publicly, and to be fair, I've only ever met them once. We're a long way away. That makes the point. We're a long way away over here, so I haven't had a lot to do with them. But I'm pretty sure they'll hear very loudly from me if I'm elected on Saturday.
Now, if you're elected and you're sitting around the COAG table, one of the big debates is energy policy. What would your position be about national energy policy? Renewable targets, clean coal, those things.
I support a diversity of energy supply into the grid. Western Australia needs that, because we are not connected to the national electricity market. So the entirety of the East Coast is on a single grid, whereas Western Australia is not. We have a separate market, so we need a diversity of supply, because we can't rely upon Victoria to back us up if the system goes down, or Queensland to back us up, or what have you. I like a diversity of supply, so supporting coal, supporting gas, and supporting renewables. But we've announced a range of renewable projects, but we're not going to have a state renewable energy target.
On the question of coal, Colin Barnett was saying the other day there's no such thing as clean coal. What do you think about the federal proposal for new coal-fired power stations with some sort of government support?
Look, I don't know a lot about it, and I think it's more an eastern states issue. But coal has an important role in providing baseload power, as does gas, and we're also supporting a wave energy plant in a town called Albany, which will add baseload power, which is renewable, into the grid. But look, I think those conversations are more eastern states conversations rather than West Coast.
Why don't you have a renewable target?
Oh, I don't think the state, as opposed to the national government, should do it. There is a national renewable target, as I recall, of 23.5% currently, which Western Australia is adhering to. But I don't think that the state should have a renewable energy target in the West Australian context.
And what do you think about Bill Shorten's goal of 50%?
Well, that's a national issue. Yeah. I'll let my federal colleagues pursue that. But if I'm elected Premier on Saturday, I'm not going to have a state renewable energy target.
The unions have been very important in Western Australia and the Labor Party. How would you reassure people that you wouldn't be a tool of the unions as Premier?
I'll always act in the public interest. I'm the most experienced opposition leader. We've got a friend out there. I'm the most experienced opposition leader in Australia, and I'm the most experienced opposition leader in 40 years in Western Australia to run for Premier. My background is I was an officer in the Royal Australian Navy, and a lot of my senior team are out of business, the law, professions, tradespeople, and the like. But I've learnt over a long period of time, you always act in the public interest. And acting in the public interest means that you take account of all interests in making decisions. And that would include business, unions, community, and the like. You need to listen to everyone, but you're certainly not in the pockets of anyone. And I know, I get one chance if I win at being Premier, I would never be in the pockets of anyone, because you want to make sure that any government you lead leaves a legacy of ethical decision-making and decision-making in the public interest.
And you'd be willing to, in a crunch, stand up to the unions?
Just no,
like
of course.
You're saying you'd stand up to Canberra?
Well, I have. That's been my history. If you go back in my ministerial career, that's exactly what happened. Recently, I announced our policy on wages, for instance, in the public sector, which is inflation-based. So we have a pretty strong approach to protecting the public interest. Having said that, I do acknowledge the role of unions in our community. I mean, without the role of unions in Australia, I think our country would have gone down the low wage, low quality path that the United States has, and I don't ever want to go down that path.
Now, of course, we don't know the result till the result is in, but obviously you're going into Saturday's vote in a strong position. I wonder, looking back on that possible challenge from Stephen Smith, you can explain what all that was about.
Well, I have difficulty explaining it because obviously
it looked very extraordinary for me.
It was extraordinary to me too. It was just one of those things. I heard rumours about it beforehand. Smithy sent me a text to inform me. And then it all happened. But I think at the end of the day, it did make me stronger. You build resilience as you go along. I built resilience and toughness through all these events. I mean, 20 years in Parliament, going through events like that, you know what you want to do. And I know I want to win, and I want to be a good Premier for WA.
Mark McGowan, thank you for talking with us today. We'll let you finish your coffee. Navigate the dogs out there and get back on the end of the election trail.
Thanks for coming to Western Australia. Great to see you.
It's been great. And that's the end of our last podcast. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins, and we'll be back with you from Canberra next week.